Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
It's going fantastic.
We are
not alone.
We are not alone. We are visited by
the spirit of
Kevin Callen. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm good. What happens? I'm off into the wilderness throughout the whole entire season. I come back for a little bit, just a little bit, and sure enough, I get a note from you guys. We're kind of stuck here. We need a fill-in. We kind of need some help here. We don't have anybody to help us. Kevin, can you once again be on, and we'll pretend you're really well-known?
Weren't we supposed to make fun of him for this?
I think the actual term was filler. We needed some filler.
We needed some B-roll.
Yes. So we've got to record like 5 episodes in the next few days so that when I'm away for 3 weeks, we actually have episodes to put on the air for people to listen to while I'm out doing the gallivanting around the world, globe-trotting.
So but it's speak. Like that old porn star that retired wanting to have him back again.
You mean
Are you comparing yourself to an old porn star? Ladies and gentlemen, Dirk Diggler.
Ron Jeremy.
I think his name is, put your hands together for the lovely and talented Sledge Hammer.
This took a left turn.
How's it going, Kevin?
I'm good.
You've been out paddling everywhere.
Yeah, it's been a really good season. Yeah. Really good. I've slept in the tent more than I have my bed. So
that's
really
nice. Good. That's awesome.
See, and that's the whole thing. Like, Christine was worried about him moving in. And then he moves out.
Yeah.
And then moves out. Then moves out. Then moves out. I don't think anything has changed at that house.
No. Christine knew long ago when she met me that I would be in the tent a lot. So, I don't think she has a problem with it. Yeah, when are you leaving?
When? Are you still here?
I'm going tomorrow. I have things to do. I have some shopping.
Right?
Yeah, that was good. Her and I haven't gone out a lot because her dog, Oliver, is not doing well. An old dog has heart issues. So we're sort of spending the summer with Oliver, taking care of Oliver, and where I go to work and come back. And actually, it's been a heat wave really bad, too. Mm. And I don't know about you guys, but the bugs are extremely bad right now. The mosquitoes, like, the world's coming to an end. So Angel really has stayed home and taken care of Oliver as well. And Angel's gone a couple trips with me, but it's been a weird season. Like, I want to get out there, but I don't know if you've been out there lately, but I used a bug shelter 2 days ago. Like, and it, like, an hour from my house near Kingston, like a bug shelter at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, we bought a bug shelter. We bought one of those no bug zones, and I'm thinking, I don't want to carry this thing's heavy on trips. But I bring it in, and then everybody just ends up sitting in it. And I'm wandering around, and they're just like, because growing up in places like Moosonee up on Hudson's Bay and out west and up in North Bay and stuff, like, I've given my share of blood over the years. So I've given my quota. So I'm not bothered by bugs as much as everybody else. That's my theory. I'm sticking to it.
Well, so, I can tell you 100% that I can deal with bugs. Obviously, I've been to a lot of places to deal with a lot of bugs. But again, north of Kingston, in the end of July, I couldn't stand them.
Yeah.
Couldn't stand them at all. And I don't use bug repellent. And if I do, it's sparingly. And I was spraying like perfume of a porn star. Hmm. So.
Mosquito.
Me and the family are going camping this weekend, Kevin, and we're not bringing a tent. We're only bringing the bug tent, the bug shelter. So we're just going to sleep under the, we have a Nemo bug out. We're going to sleep under that and just a ground tarp and the bug tent.
So I was thinking about that. I'm going out in another day for another trip. I'm thinking of doing that. But where I am, too, there's a lot of tick issues. So do you put a barrier down on the ground for that?
Because yeah, I put a ground tarp down just in case the ground's moist or whatever. But it doesn't – we still see mice. I remember waking up one night and there was a frog sitting on Beckett's chest as he was sleeping. And so the animals do get in, but it's still nice. It's fine.
You can see the moose before he tramples you, which is nice.
Well, you're going to get trampled if you're in a tent or in a bug shelter. It doesn't matter.
You just won't know what's trampling you.
You'll see it coming in the bug tent.
Derek, make sure you check your moisture areas in the morning, like your armpits and your groin and things like that.
For ticks? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How many ticks have you had lately?
Too many. I don't like ticks. I've had 12 so far.
Really?
So
I've had one since I was 15.
I've never had one.
Well, I don't know what's like. I've taken the meds twice, where you go to the drugstore that day, and they give you 3 pills to take that day.
Right.
I've done that twice, and actually, I should have done it more. But I remember when I went to the drugstore guy, Jonathan, and I looked at him, and he goes, "You're back again." I went, "No, no, seriously, this is insane. I can't keep doing this every single time I get bit by a tick." And he goes, and he said off the record, "No, you don't, because I don't want you here all the time taking the pills."
Jonathan, the tick pill pusher. Hey, Kevin, first one's free, buddy.
So on that front, Justin Timberlake just announced that he's got Lyme disease.
He got
chewed on by a tick, and he's saying it's quite debilitating at times, he complains. So there you go.
I just tend to stay away from them. My tick avoidance game is on par with the best in the world.
You can't avoid them. Like in today's world too, like in the Quarthas, like there never was an issue, but now they are. Yeah. Algonquin, now they've arrived. And Frontenac. Now the new thing, Frontenac has always been bad, but the new one, and I thought this was just a rumor, because I had someone in my upper neck, and I wondered how they ever got there by the time I got home, because they crawl up you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a biologist told me, no, they just drop out of the trees.
Yeah, that's what I've always was told.
Or tall grass, there could be 10,000 on a blade of grass type thing, or if you're going through a field, and they just kind of jump onto you from at the knee height or hip mm-hmm. height.
Yeah, I've always been told, like, when you rub against tree, like, going portaging through or hiking through narrow trails and you're rubbing against all the vegetation, it rubs off and that's where they fall onto you and they cling onto your clothes and then go party time boys and they find bare skin.
That's the norm that I knew, but actually they literally are up in the canopy of an oak tree and like woo, parachute down onto your neck.
Vampires. It's the new thing now, avoiding ticks.
Yep,
got to learn to do it, Kevin.
More and more of them moving north, and just different, more than just Lyme disease is coming our way. So.
Oh, yeah. I saw a picture of you, because you use Benz, the wipes, right?
Yeah, well, Benz has a new tick repellent,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I saw that picture.
And we weren't allowed that in Canada for a couple years, because right. in the U.S. we can use it. I can't pronounce the chemical.
Permethrin?
Permission.
Yeah, but we're not allowed that. So I spray it on my pant legs before I go anywhere now with the dog. Like, I walk the dog every day here near Kingston,
mm-hmm.
and it's my thing. Like, spray my legs and everything else, and then put my socks over my pant legs and look like a nerd. That's fine. Yeah. But also, I started spraying Angel, my dog, with Naturpel. So it's an organic chemical, and the vet recommended it because Angel can't take the meds that dogs do for ticks because she throws up diarrhea. Like, I have tried everything, but she does. I can put that chemical on her back neck, which is sufficient, but not. So she said, "Naturpel, do you have it?" I went, "Yeah, I bought a whole bunch of it at home. I use it for myself." She goes, "Yeah, you can spray that on your dog. It's organic, except you cannot spray it and let the dog go into the water because that chemical stuns and kills fish." It's like, what?
Oh.
Yeah. So I don't do that. Well, I do when I want to fish for dinner. I'm just joking.
Let the dog help out.
Yeah.
I cover the dog, attach her to a rope, throw him into the lake, the fish ride to the surface. I get my net, scoop up the fish. Is that what you're saying, Kevin? Is that what you're saying, Kevin?
Well, I would highly recommend it. Like, I have a new vet here now, too, right? And she's fantastic. She's a camper. And I had a meeting with her, and she went over all the things that Angel, the first aid kit for my dog, four trips, four ticks for all the other things to take along. And she got it because, like, she's a camper. So she's okay. Forget your first aid kit. I mean, you need a first aid kit for your dog. I go, well, which I have. And she goes, well, let's add some stuff. The one cool thing was that the horse bandage, if you go to horse stores, it's that it's like a tension bandage. But, yeah, if your dog gets a sore paw or something in this paw, you can use that. And also what pills the dog can have that we have, but what which ones are not good for it. So, yeah, it was a good meeting.
Yeah, our last we have two first aid kits we take with us, one for us and one for the dog, with all these extra little bits added to it. Our old vet, because she saw our last dog and said, how long has he had allergies, because he was beet red every time he goes running through tall grass, and she said, just give him some Benadryl.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Talk to your vet. It's a good idea.
Especially after I took my dog to the vet, because she did get Lyme and a couple other things. $14 later, I went, okay, let's have a sit down.
vet appointments are never cheap. Ever.
Nope.
Ever, 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 ever. So. All right, Kevin. We got you here as a filler for a reason.
Some B-roll
stuff. This is our B-roll show. Let's talk some of these trips you've been on this year. Couple of them. Specifically, Lake Superior, my nemesis, Denison Falls. So, spectacular Denison Falls. Highlight of a 5-day wilderness water trail canoe trip along rugged Lake Superior Highlands Conservation Reserve. That's how it was sold. July 4th to 9th, which is past. The trip includes qualified guides. Now, I don't want qualified guides.
Yeah, some
you
companies
got some mediocre.
Some companies advertise non-qualified guides.
Can you knock some money off that if I get the non-qualified ones? All meals and snacks.
Wow.
Group safety and communication gear, group camping gear, sanitary and kitchen gear. I don't like that they put those ones together.
I know.
And the trip map. Few sights on the spectacular north shore of Lake Superior rival the spellbinding beauty and power of Denison Falls. As we paddle into rugged isolation of some of Ontario's least visited provincial parks and conservation areas, you'll marvel at the planet's oldest rocks and revel in the awe-inspiring beauty of this 40-meter wilderness waterfall hidden deep in the boreal forest. Man, I wish I could imitate that David Attenborough.
Oh, yeah.
This coastline is home to some of the most incredible campsites you can imagine, with sweeping sands rivaling the beaches of the Caribbean and shores of water-polished pebbles in every color of the rainbow. That's how they're selling it so far.
Well, I'll tell you exactly what happened, and it's almost almost similar to what they're saying, but I'll emphasize a few points there, to be quite honest. The reality of it is, yeah, they're right. It was incredible. We all wanted to go to Denison Falls to experience the haunting place of Bill Mason, or his favorite haunt, I guess I would say it, where he filmed in Water Walker and other films too, and how that falls is way back in the bush, boreal forest, almost Amazon-like jungle, how they couldn't dam it because it was hard to get to, and you can't just drive to it and take a snapshot or a selfie. You have to work your way to get there. You have to paddle to it or boat to it, whatever. We took a 36 Voyager replica canoe to get to it, but then you have to hike up to it, which is a 5-kilometer hike there and back, which I would say is more than 5 kilometers. It took us all day to get there. There's a rope you have to climb up to get to the pinnacle of it. You don't have to go to the pinnacle, the top, but a lot of us did. But yeah, you have to have upper body strength to actually go up this. I couldn't imagine doing the Dog River on a canoe trip and portaging down there. Now, I know people have, in fact, friends of mine have, That would be incredible. Obviously, Bill Mason and the film guy did as well. It was incredible to be there. Mystic First Nations knew this place long before Bill Mason did. There was the native paintings at the mouth of it. Obviously, they would fish there. I saw a roaming trout along the Dog River. Our neighbor down the road, what was his name? I knew the guy from social media. Andy Baxter. Yeah, and he caught lake trout just off the rock and gave us seven fish and stuff.
I had his name here, too.
Oh, what's happening? There's some shuffling.
Uh-oh.
We all right?
Oh, yeah, we're good. Oh, Kevin Baxter.
Yeah.
So anyway. Your first name and Andy's last name. Just remember that.
Yes. Isn't that kind of weird? What, did Derek just fall over or something?
What?
No, I'm just moving some pictures or some papers.
I'll put it in the synopsis of what happened, though. We all met at National Superior Adventures. David Wells, owner there, I've known for many, many years. He asked me to do this trip. And I thought, wow, would anybody go with me? Like, okay, that's kind of cool. 18% of it went towards the construction of the protection of the Trans-Canada Waterway Trail. And I thought, well, that's a good initiative. That's good. And then Algoma Country Tourism actually also helped with it as well. They wanted everybody to go there. I thought, wow, okay, I don't think this trip will go. Like, who would want to be with me in a 36-foot canoe? And then the two guys, Oliver and Mike, really good guys, I went to them and talked to them on the phone. I said, guys, okay, I've guided for years, so here's the thing. I'm not going to guide. Okay, I don't want to guide, and I will not go in your kitchen. I will not step in your kitchen. I will just be the host of the most, and I'll tell stories. That's my job, and you'll be the guide. And they love that. So as a guide, I would appreciate that too. Mm-hmm. So I said, we'll do that. As long as we get people, they're like, Kevin, it's already full. We filled the boat in 5 days.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And what? And he goes, yeah, we've never really filled the Voyager canoe. We were trying to promote this whole thing the entire time. And all of a sudden, what the heck? You promote it on your social media and we filled the boat. And I went, well, who's going? Well, we don't really, not going to tell you until you get here. I was So what happened was I arrived. It was kind of cool. I drove up and stayed the night at the Chutes Provincial Park the night before and met some friends, actually, colleagues of mine, and also some past students. That was kind of cool, camped across from me. Then went up to Lake Superior, met the guides, met everybody, and most of the people, in fact, everybody except two, had arrived 2 days before. They were so excited about this trip. They came up to the lodge at National Superior, camped on the beach, whatever, because they were so excited. And then we all met, and then we did a trial run the next day in the Voyager canoe to figure out how to steer it up the Michigan River. We got to know each other. Of course, I did the whole thing. Like, why are you here?
Like, right.
Why are you here? I know I'm here. I was asked, and I got to be a host, and also I had a job. Like, I don't have a job right now, so I got a job being the host. And I went over to everybody, and just lovely, lovely answers. Some people on social media said, well, we always wanted to go to Denison Falls just like you. And I go, yeah, I've never been. I've been to a lot of places in the world, but I've never been to Denison Falls with Bill Mason.
See, I figured they would have been there by now.
Yeah. I don't know. I was busy with other things. I don't know why I haven't, to be quite honest. I've done Lake Superior a lot. I love the place. I had one Ed, or Ted. I think we called him Ted the entire time, but I think his name was Ed. He was a forester from Thunder Bay, and he was a keen canoeist. Incredible canoeist, and just a few minutes of talking to him, the places they had been, I went, well, why are you here? And he said, because I've planned trips all my life, and for my son and my family, and I don't want to plan. I just want to go. I want someone else to take me, like a guide. And also he wanted to be with me and share stories, whatever, but that was the whole purpose, was just not to plan. I had a couple of couples from Whitefish and also from Muskoka area. They knew each other from social media, and you know them, actually. They're good fans of yours. And they just thought this was the most biggest experience of the world. And I thought, what, did you hear Kevin telling stories? No. we love you a bit, but that's not their main purpose. We basically paid to be here to visit Denison Falls and paddle Lake Superior. And we also had an American couple that wanted to experience Canada. They had never been to Canada. They wanted to experience the vast wilderness of Canada. That was kind of cool. We also had an artist, Will, and his wife, Jenny, and they wanted to paint. They wanted to go on to Lake Superior and also to Denison Falls, which actually where Bill Mason painted, and that was the whole thing, is to do art. And we also had Russ. Russ was amazing. Russ had been on this trip three times already with Becky Mason, with a bunch of other people, Ian Tamblyn he had been on the trip with. And I go, Russ, why are you here? He goes, well, I don't really know who you are, Kevin. I looked you up online before I arrived. I love that. I love that. I went, Russ, you're my buddy. And I went, well, why are you here? He goes, because you can never have this experience just once. You have to keep going. And he said, actually, our trip was the best of all. Not to compare to all the others, but he said this is the camaraderie we had in that canoe. Could you imagine? I'm going off in tangent, but to really emphasize here. Could you imagine going on a trip in a Voyager canoe along Lake Superior, the largest freshwater lake in the world, that could actually swell up in seconds, to go up to a waterfall in the middle of nowhere on a hike that actually had to scramble up like an ATV, whatever what they call them, four-wheeler, scrambling up. And you're in the canoe with 13 strangers, and you can't leave. Okay, you're not on a cruise ship. You're not on a kayak trip. You can't all of a sudden, yeah, I don't really like what you said. So I'm just going to pile away for a while. And so we're stuck together, and this is it. This is the kicker. The first day, so we did the training, and the next day we're about to leave, and my luck, and they all tease me. They say, Kevin, it is true what they say. You have the worst luck in the world. And so we headed out the first day, and we could not see the lake. It was full of mist or fog. I would say more mist than fog. And our first time was to go over the bay, which is a four-kilometer crossing, before we get to the shore from Michigan River. And Oliver, the main guide, takes a compass heading, which is really interesting because I think he was late 20s, early 30s, late 20s probably, and he took a compass heading. And I said, well, why not a GPS? He goes, well, I got the GPS too, but I like the compass more for the type of travel. So he took a compass up at 300 degrees, and we started paddling out. And we're going out into the mouth of Michigan, which is great. And then if you watch the video I did on Casey Happy Camper, it's amazing. Because all of a sudden you see the canoe turn. Because we have been trained how to turn. And we turn into the wind and the troughs, into fog for 4 kilometers. I'm talking pretty close to over 2 hours of paddling with no shoreline and nothing except the view of your next person in front of you, of their red paddle flashing.
That's awesome.
Water.
Yeah, it would be cool.
But I'm thinking, who's going to throw up first?
Was it Ralph?
I'm talking swells. I'm not talking little weight. I'm talking swells, right? Like, I'm talking swells were coming in, and we had to bail the water out. Swells coming into the boat. So I go to Oliver. I went, trial by fire, for sure. Like, I was anxious. I've never done that before. Janet was in front of me, and she was high anxiety. She even told me, she was, I'm really nervous about the trip. I really want to do it. I look at her. She, are you fine? I've never felt this so alive in my life. And she's bailing water out the side of her. And I go to Oliver, and he's in the back, and he's got an old kettlebell paddle, elongated otter tail. He's like, just doing pries and draws like no tomorrow, and he's working it, right? And I said, how's this? Oh, we're good. Like, this canoe can't flip. Like, the Voyager has lived. We'll live. Went, oh, okay, good.
Well, that sounds like a challenge now, doesn't it?
Oh, it was amazing. And then we couldn't go as far as we wanted to the first day, which is good because it downpoured rain. We got tarp set up before it rained. Around this elongated beach on Lake Superior, we have some tea and some dinner, and the meals they made were amazing. And we all sort of settled down. And what I did is I got James Raffin's book out, Fire in the Bones. And in that book, the first chapter, he writes about how he went up to, after Bill Mason's death, he got one of his old canoes, Joyce, Bill Mason's wife, had given to him to borrow, to go up the river and go visit Denison Falls. And I had everybody read a section of that chapter to anticipate what he had seen. And we all got really excited. And I knew on about the whole Bill Mason thing, but at the end of it, we did see that life, that place, that pilgrimage. But at the end, when we're coming back from that trip, it wasn't really Bill Mason. It was the idea we wanted to be in that red canoe that he was in.
Right?
Right? It wasn't Bill Mason. Like, yeah, who's Bill Mason? Some people actually, listening would not even know who Bill Mason is. Yeah. But the idea of being in that red canoe, in that the sort of fan-shaped waterfall dropping 40 meters in the middle of nowhere, was amazing. But also to paddle back on Superior. Like, if you've never, ever experienced Superior, you need to go. Here's the thing, like, it's ocean-like vistas, incredible, but the water is so cold that I had ankle problems. I had an injury prior before that. I was worried about even going. And as soon as I dropped out of the canoe into the water, I went, oh, that feels so good. This is the cold water going on my ankle. I go, yeah. So, you know, I'm going off a great tangent again, but it was an incredible experience and really nice people, friends for life, to be quite honest. We really had a good camaraderie. There's a lot of, you know, misadventures that happened along the way. And I said to a lot of them, you were good people. Like, you helped each other out. You didn't have to, but you did. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fantastic to see. I just fell in love with humans again, to be quite honest.
Well, the day before you guys left, you guys had a practice day to teach everybody prize and power strokes and all that sort of stuff and to work as a team, which was kind of cool that they took that extra time to, because sometimes it's like, okay, let's load up, let's go sort of deal. But yeah, 10 paddlers, 2 guides, plus you, 36-foot, 11-meter replica Voyager canoe. National Film Board of Canada. If you go there and Google or search for Bill Mason or Water Walker, like, I've had that playing on my computer at work so many times, in the background even. Like, I'll just have it just to, like, somebody listens to the radio, I'll have it running in the background, and I know in my head exactly what is happening on the screen without even seeing it. But if you have not seen Water Walker by Bill Mason, you definitely need to watch it. Even if it isn't just go to Denison Falls. I mean, you see, and some of his other films as well, like Path of the Paddle and whatnot, seeing them on Lake Superior and the power of Mother Nature on that lake is phenomenal. But I think that's the thing is, now answer me this. After doing that, would you... If you were given the option to take Bill Mason's red canoe, would you go in the red canoe to Denison?
Yeah, that's a good question. I wouldn't. I would just go on my own canoe. That's I've never been asked that.
Of course not.
It would be cool to be in the red canoe. And I realize why James Raffin did it, because he was writing a book about the life of Bill Mason.
Right.
And it was really iconic for him to go in that red canoe, that the spirit boat, right? I don't need that. I'd need to be in the wilderness that he paddled in. I would say I would need to be enshrouded with that, engulfed in that. That was my thing. Yes, I'd love to be in that red canoe. And when I say that people want to be in that red canoe, I don't mean to say they want to be in that physical canoe. It's to do the red canoe. I want to be in that wilderness that he was paddling. When you watch Water Walker, mm-hmm. you experience... hit the surroundings of wilderness, and how when I grew up, I would go to the library and watch those films religiously, and I would read his books, and I taught myself how to paddle by looking at his films. And yeah, I taught my skills that way in one sense, but really how I taught my skills was to go out there and do it.
Right.
Right. Not watch it in libraries. That was the catalyst. But the idea of actually going out there and, I mean, good Lord, to actually stand there. And I'm not saying Denison Falls is the pinnacle place, whatever, but oh, just to stand there and see that falls and that scene in Water Walker where the camera, Ken Buck, actually, which mm-hmm. actually get, like, he needs credit. He was a film person that carried the bloody camera. They didn't even know what film they got until they got back to the dark room, right? We're all taking our pictures, whatever, and looking at them that night around the campfire. But actually to see that cascade of water. And the point that it was even close to be dam soon. Mm-hmm. They were going to do it a couple of decades ago, and Becky and a bunch of people fought over it. I mean, the White River lost. They dammed that river instead of the Dog. Some people call it the University River, but it's the Dog River. But yeah, it's just to be in that area and to be on Lake Superior. And the cool thing is, our last day, we only had an hour left, and we stopped at Sandy Beach, where A.W. Jackson painted, just at lunch. And we met this old guy walking down the beach to say hello to us. I went, who are you? And he goes, well, I'm the one that volunteered to put the outhouses up in the campsite. So I went, oh, good Lord. So I interviewed him, and I said, how have things changed along Lake Superior? He goes, not much, because it is protected. They do a lot of work to protect the I mean, inland, things are going weird. But they are trying to protect the water, the shoreline.
Right.
And when you go to Lake Superior, like, who would ruin that shoreline? Like, well, the devil?
People would.
Yeah.
They would be the devil.
Joel Cooper. What? He's lived there for 34 years.
Yeah.
And you get to, yeah, he's the guy that put the outhouses there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, you're looking at that and living there and seeing all that every day that's awesome.
Yeah, right? Yeah, just to feel the mist. Also, I left a heat wave in southern Ontario, right, that everybody just hated. The one night, I woke up at 4 in the morning, it was 4 degrees.
Wow, oh, I saw really? That. Day three. You guys are up and everybody's in toques and all that sort of thing.
And that was just a couple weeks ago.
Dinner the first night was trip chicken. So how were Oliver and Mike as cooks?
Oh, really good. Yeah, I can never, I will never actually knock them. They were amazing, amazing guides. And I used to guide, so I knew how well they worked and how much they worked. 24 hours, for sure. The cool thing is they did... As a guide, too, I noticed what they did. This is our kitchen. Here you go. Have fun over there. Stay away. And they got everything done. So there were some people, most people helped out with because when you're guiding a trip, I remember that, too. The clients really don't have to help with dishes. They don't have to put a tarp up. They don't have to get a fire going. But with 13 people, it's kind of nice for people to help.
To pitch in a bit, yeah.
Yeah, so you saw some group dynamics of that happening. You saw some people jumping in. In fact, Jenny, she started doing the dishes the one morning. I said, why are you doing dishes? My hands were so cold, I wanted to get my hands in the hot water. so most people really helped out. The cool thing, too, is to unload and load that boat and to get it on the beach. Not easy at all.
Yeah.
Those
big yellow rollers, inflatable rollers. Yeah.
We first called them bananas, and I said, no, sorry, I'm going to have to break protocol. They are yellow penises, okay? They're not bananas. they're elongated yellow rolling things, and they're not bananas. So we called them yellow penises. But before that, they used to have to go in the bush and get logs to roll the boat. And then finally someone had this great idea to actually use these rollers, which you needed. Like, that's the only way to get the canoe up on the beach without damaging. But then the gear, you saw the gear, good Lord. We did a train, or what is called a line, and just hauled it back and forth with each other, and then it was done literally in 5 minutes. It was all done. Then we all set up our tents. Some people chose the bush, some people chose the beach. Beach looked great. I chose the beach, but after a while, my beach sand was everywhere, in my sandals, in my underwear, my teeth, my G-string, it was everywhere.
we still have the Moose River sand. Like, I'll still pull things out when we did our trip up to Moosonee, and things I haven't used since that trip, and I'll pull it up, and there's sand in it. It's like, really? How do you get rid of everywhere. This stuff? Yeah, yeah, beach sand, man, can't get rid of it. Things like French toast, chili... breakfast wraps and everything. You look like you guys ate pretty well.
Yeah, really well. Yeah. Well, they're paying good money to be on that trip. So, like, when I got it for Tamami, one of the outfitters, too, like, they ate like kings. That's why I probably eat pretty good on trip myself, because I'm used to actually doing really good meals for everybody. And for safety protocol, they had everything. For group dynamics, they had everything. They're very calm, cool, collective. Poor Mike, though, if you ever saw the video, like, he came from the UK. Like, that was his first year in guiding in Canada. And, of course, the bugs, they were bad, but not, like, extreme bad. But to him, like, he swelled up like you wouldn't believe. I had to give him Benadryl. I had to give him whatever. I had my kit to calm his legs. Like,
it's in the video.
Oh.
Yeah.
And it's because he was fresh meat. But... He was also a climber, too. So when we got to the part where we had to climb up to see the pinnacle, he just clambered up like a monkey. Like, okay, guys. And, of course, we worked for an hour to get up on a rope. And he's like, come climbing down. And every time he saw some cliff face along Lake Superior, he wanted to climb up just to say he did.
Yep.
Yeah, really good guys. Oliver as well. The whole outfit was really good. And, yeah.
So there was one point you guys were passing by this one beach, and Oliver was saying about the Voyageur grave in the back of the woods. He's not been able to find, but there's stories. And you got to think, on that, I mean, that was a Voyageur route along the Superior shoreline. How many forgotten stories there are in wilderness areas like that?
Forgotten graves, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, and not even that, the First Nation stories. Like, this old book I found, the last story, you'll read about it next week in Explore Magazine, where there's a quote from a 1963 author that went to Lake Superior and talked to the Ojibwe elders there. And he said, can you tell us a story? He goes, there's too many. There's too many stories to tell you a story.
Right.
And, the Voyageurs. And to be in a Voyageur canoe, there was Will. His whole family came from the Voyageurs, and that's why he went on the trip. If you watch him, he's a really funny guy, an artist, and he's speaking French, and he's got the sash on and the hat and really living the life. And then he realizes, he goes, how did they ever live like this?
Right.
Like, the bugs were bad, and we got to go into a tent. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then someone, Ed, brought pemmican, which actually was really good. But, you know, we ate the pemmican, but we, you know, had really good meals after that.
Well, we've had those discussions, and I've had them out on a trip as well with people going, I don't think, like, I mean, for all the paddling and everything we do, if somebody said, okay, you're going to be a Voyageur now, and you got to do those routes to, you know, like from Montreal or whatever, way up to Winnipeg or wherever you're going, and they do it fast, and all the dangers and all the gear you've got to, and they basically run along those portages.
Yeah.
I'd be dead the first day. You know, it's wild with the life they had, right?
It was really wild. It was teamwork too, because it only took us the first day, because we're in that mist, the shroud of mist that actually we listened up. What's our job? Our job is to power stroke. And Mike was at the front, the one guide, and he would set the pace. So his red paddle would push through the water, and the next person, and you would keep up with that pace. And sometimes, me more than anybody else, I would flabber, or I stop the film, and they would yell at me. And then it was Oliver in the back that would steer. And there was a point where, if you watched in the film too, I think the second video where we got a tailwind, and we had a sail, and went, we should sail right now, shouldn't we? He goes, if we put a sail up now, because the wind's coming from the southeast, we would sail out to the middle of Lake Superior. we're not going to do that. Went, okay, it was good. And we made more than double time because of the tailwind. Of course, the storm came in after that, but he was working all the time with that paddle.
Right.
And then all of us were doing power, power, power. And if you were an individual, you could not be a Voyageur in that boat. If you're a self-righteous person saying, I'm more important than everybody else, you could not be in that boat. You'd be tossed.
Right.
Because it was teamwork. A person saying, I'm going to set the pace, person in the back is going to steer it, and we're just the power.
Right.
And if you try to do a pry or a cross draw in the middle, you're done, boy.
We lose more paddlers this way. What was the pine weevil story?
Oh, that's brutal. I know. Thank you for bringing that up.
Hey, not a problem, buddy.
I feel good about my manly.
Kevin's a manly man.
Yeah, I don't like pine weevils, and if you got bit by one, you'll know why. And everybody goes, oh, it's just a bug, it's just a bug, until you get bit by one. They hurt. So they're coming around from the trees while we're having snacks, whatever, and they're dropping on me for more. Again, I have the worst luck. They're dropping me, and I'm screaming, ah, 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 and they're having a blast. They're having a blast, right? And sure enough, one grabbed my throat and took a chunk out of it, and it really hurt, right? Ah! And I wish I had my camera going. Who was it that got bit? I forget who got bit afterwards, and they even almost cried. I went, see? See?
I told you.
So their bite was greater than yours.
Yes.
Which means yes. You chose the lesser of two weevils.
Oh.
You've been waiting all night to say that.
I've been waiting since yesterday to say that. I didn't care about the weevil story. It was all about me.
I was just setting up my own joke.
But it's when you guys are talking about that in the videos there, you never hear people talking about getting bit by weevils.
When you're at night in Boreal Forest, you hear the those are weevils going nuts on the balsam or the pine, whatever.
Or Kevin's
and
neck.
And they have mandibles. It's just like, you look at them. Like imagine that. No, it hurt. I have a scar.
Scarred for life. Pineapples in the fire.
Yeah, what's that about?
Never tried it before. It was really cool. Really delicious. And it was one of those things where, okay, I never saw that coming.
They just took two pineapples and threw them in the fire.
Yep. Here's the thing to ask you guys. So they're loading up everything, and I'm trying to help, and I'm looking at all their gear because I'm intrigued with what they're bringing and all the stuff they're bringing, and they have these two pineapples that are set separate on top of everything.
Swingers.
Well, I didn't know about the swinger thing, guys. I didn't. So, Rick, great guy, Rick on the trip, him and Jill, two guys, they're hilarious together, good friends. They put the pineapples upside down and Bingo. Started laughing. And I even filmed it. And they're like, well, you shouldn't really film that, Kevin. And I went, I did not know that upside pineapples were swinging things.
And now Kevin's got four of them on the front step. Does Christine know about this yet? No, I was just curious because I don't like pineapple as a rule unless it's cooked. And this is just a recent, like last 5 years sort of thing I've realized. I like pineapple if it's cooked. So we got the smoker and we do pineapple on the smoker with some brown sugar, cinnamon, and honey. Delicious. Absolutely delicious. When we have people over, that's the first thing gone.
Yeah.
So then I see this in your video. They're just throwing two pineapples into the fire. And they get charred. And then they cut all the char off. And then, was it sweet and juicy? And
yeah. It was amazing.
Weird. Yeah. I've never seen that before.
I never thought to do that.
It was one of those things where I say, forget the s'mores. I just want charred pineapple with syrup on them.
Right? Huh. Yeah. They're heavier than s'mores, but...
But then afterwards, everybody put their key in a bowl. I'm not sure what that was all about.
You mix it around. Did you get to choose a key?
This is going sideways.
It's the education of Kevin Callan. For some reason, he doesn't want to go on one of these trips again. When you guys were coming out, I mean, the weather was pretty good for you guys. It seemed.
Yeah, we were lucky. Right? Yeah, we had bad weather. Well, we had some severe weather through the night that they didn't film. Mm-hmm. The one night, actually, the first night at camp, that was funny. The majority of people arrived. They had a small lodge or whatever to stay at, and I was the host, and there I am in a pup tent out in the beach, and it just piss rain. I didn't get wet. Russ, he was also in the tent. The tent he used was, remember the old ones we got from Canadian Tire back in the 80s?
Oh, the little igloo type, or
no, like triangle A-frame.
A regular old pup tent.
Yeah, yeah, he was in one of those, and I went, oh my lord! And he was the only, I think the only one that stayed on the beach was me, right beside me. And Russ, I love that guy. I get up in the morning, Russ, you all right? Yeah, I'm good. Are you wet? Of course I am.
What are you gonna do, right? Part of it's the experience. What about, now I noticed you were going through some, your hikes and along when you guys were paddling and stuff, saw stuff on the shore like lady slippers, yellow platonia, dogwood, and all that sort of stuff, bald eagles and whatnot. What else, anything really cool or different?
Yeah, bluebell, it's an Arctic plant that doesn't grow anywhere except the Arctic, but it does grow along Lake Superior. We saw wood lily, but wasn't wood lily. I actually didn't know what it was. It was a sort of a shorter type of wood lily, and sure enough, I forget the name of it. I looked it up today, actually, and it's a Arctic plant as well. So there's a lot of plants that live on the Arctic that live along the North Shore of Lake Superior, because it's very diverse, very very cool environments, like cold,
right?
Very misty, very mystic. And yeah, and a lot of bird life, a lot of warblers that I'm thinking, what are you doing here? Yeah, that's kind of cool. I saw that in northern Quebec too when I went on that trip. I was seeing warblers I've never seen before in my life. I took a lot of time in the last year or two to sort of broaden my education, because I know my species, but only what I taught. And I used to work in jobs that I knew more, and then now I'm broadening my horizons. So it's kind of cool to stop on Lake Superior and say, I don't know what you are.
Right? You're a little flappy birdie thing, but I don't know what kind.
Yeah, Merlin app is the best, I tell you.
I've got that app. It's fantastic.
The old days, we'd have to get all the books out and Merlin app, we're good.
Yeah.
Yep. In your videos, I like at the end there, you put in Water Walker, Bruce Coburn.
I did. That was a touchy thing, too, because I had no copyright for that. So Becky Mace, a good friend of mine, said, you know, I told her I would really like to put something in of Bill Mason. She goes, well, I have no copyright of that. It's National Film Board. She did give me some photos of her dad filming and painting. So when you see those in the second last film, she gave me the rights for those.
Right.
But she couldn't give me the rights of National Film Board. And at the last minute I was editing the last pit, I went, it's got to be in. It's got to be. And then his voiceover of why he goes. And I went, well, what will happen? I won't get monetized. I won't make $35. So I put it in, and sure enough, yeah, they knocked it, saying you can't use it. However, there's no negative towards you. It'll still go up. So, right. So I just won't make $35 or whatever I make off of YouTube.
$700,000 down the tubes, buddy.
Yeah, that'll never happen.
Those days are long gone.
But it's true in your life where you think about that. It was like, well, why am I doing this video? And the end was Bill Mason. If I can't put Bill Mason talking at the end and his music, yeah. So I did. I just worried that they would not allow the video to be up.
Right.
Oh, I might get a call soon. I don't know. But I think if you only put a short section of it in, then, and you credit them. That's the thing about going on now. You just have to credit people. You have to reference them.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times I've seen this in the last couple of months where writers and filmmakers and everything else, and I'm not knocking the young people, but I am right now. I am actually not knocking the young people, to be quite honest. They won't reference anybody.
I know. Yeah.
Like, you got that information from someone.
You got to credit them.
You assume they got it from someone and just didn't make it up.
I know they didn't make it up because I know who they are and I know where they got it from.
Kevin Callan.
No, that's not
who made it up.
I'm not saying that. That has happened to me personally too. But no, I'm not saying that. But I'm old enough to know where all the stuff's come from. Yeah, if you're and also Bruce Coburn did not write that song. It was another. Oh shoot! See, I should know his name, and I know the person too that recorded or wrote that music, and then Bruce Coburn played it. So you don't see that guy's name everywhere, too, right? So, right. So it's important that we do that. So,
yes,
or Ken Buck. Ken Buck was the filmmaker that did all that. You don't see him, and I knew Ken Buck. He passed away a few years ago. Amazing guy, incredible person, and for him to do all that film work.
Right?
It was a black bag over his head and wonder if the aperture is right. And
is he the one that came up with the film mounted the side of the helmet?
Actually, I don't quote me on that, but talking to Becky, I think it was Bill's idea and then Ken went for it. If you do yourself a favor, reread Fire in the Bones, James Raffin. It's my fifth read now since it came out. And just to read how he came about filming all that. What's incredible is Christine's grandson, Jude, he's just turning 4 and he's a little bored the other day. He's a boy. And I put on Palace of the Sea for him. And then Christine even said, well, he won't like that. I went, everybody.
Will like
that. Yeah. That kid has watched that continuously when he visits. He wants to watch Palace of the Sea. and the storyline behind it.
Yeah.
And Bill Mason was a mastermind of getting that story to that kid. It really was.
It's a childhood thing for us, right? I remember them wheeling in the little TV on the stand and put it in the front of the classroom and, okay, watch this. And the teacher would go in the back and have a smoke or something. I don't know.
Well, what kid didn't throw a stick in the rapids to see where it went? It's called a poo stick. Poo stick.
Right? Poo stick. Yeah. So it looks like everybody had a great time on the trip. Did anything really stand out to you on that trip?
Good or bad?
Good or bad.
There's nothing really bad about it. If group dynamics, it could have went horribly wrong, but there was more goodness in people than bad.
That's awesome.
So I can't go back and saying it was bad. Because in theory, like I went into that trip thinking this could go all bad. Like right. We're on the pier with strangers in the Voyager canoe. Like what was I thinking? I met a lot of new friends, good people. Again, like I said, goodness in people. And also rekindled my love affair with Lake Superior. Again, if you've never been, you need to go to Lake Superior. Killarney is beautiful. Tomagami is amazing. Algonquin is the familiar. But Lake Superior, you're really dumb shot. Like, what the? Yeah. You really have to go. And bad's my anxiety the first day, being in that boat, being in rough water with a 300-degree heading, going on, and then trusting Oliver behind me that I didn't know because I wasn't the guide. He was the guide.
Mm-hmm.
That took a bit for me, but I actually liked it. It was almost like I was on a holiday. Like, here you go, buddy. If we die, it's all your fault.
It's not your fault.
Wash my
hands clean of that.
My hands are clean.
Have they all die? Not my fault.
It was also really rejuvenating to be with colleagues again. Like I haven't talked for a bit and being with coworkers. I've been here by myself writing and stuff. And to be with you know Mike and Oliver and being with colleagues and having familiar agendas and etiquette and stuff of that was really good. I really liked too. Nobody even noticed this. Well, maybe they did. They didn't say anything. But at night, when we set up our tents, Oliver and Mike set their tents way off. You wouldn't like what a pinnacle of rock way up in the escarpment, like way down the end of the beach. And you know, I think the clients were saying, "Well, I guess they're doing that just so they don't bother us." And I went, "No, they're not. They're like days over, buddy."
I don't want any more of this. Day is over.
Yeah. I'm sorry. The guide you have reached is not in service till 6 a.m. tomorrow.
They had coffee for us going at 7 a.m. I'm talking done at 7 a.m.
Right.
They had breakfast right after. They're very calm, cool, collective of everything that happened. The one day we were supposed to actually do two groups up to the falls. One is to go in the morning and the second group go in the afternoon. And then some people said, well, we just want to go now. They're so pumped to go. And of course that's group dynamics. And it was so beautiful too. I went, well, you're going to have to talk to the guides about that.
Right. Don't look at me.
Yeah. So sorry. I'm great. You're talking to me, but you're going to have to talk to Oliver and Mike. So they came to the consensus that we'd all go together and everybody agreed that we'd go together. And at the end of the day, we all needed a full day to get there, even right. though it was supposed to be a half day hike because there's only 5 kilometers back and forth. But you know, it was so overwhelming of that trip that we needed to do that. So things happened almost like a spiritual thing. It happened. Not all of the members got to the very top. There was a couple that couldn't make it, about maybe a quarter way through. They couldn't handle the trail. It was a pretty rough trail. It's a moderate trail, and I'd still defend that it was a moderate trail. People say, well, it's not moderate. But in definition of what a novice, moderate to advanced trail is on Lake Superior, it was a moderate trail in Lake Superior.
Right.
People will disagree with me for sure on that. But of definition, textbook definition, it was moderate. It was steep climbs, whatever. The very end was not moderate. You had to go up in a rope, but you didn't have to go that part. You could see the falls, but to climb up.
But who's not going to go if they can?
If they can. I asked me worried if I could. I mean, I'm getting old, and but it was Janet. She led the charge, actually. She's like, well, I didn't think I could do any of it, to even get here.
Right.
And scrambled up, she did. And then Jenny followed, and then Pauline followed, and and the guys too, whatever. But there was sort of this cheer, like, you know, hurrah, hurrah, we made it. And not that they conquered wilderness. It was nothing to do with that. They actually conquered their own challenges, their own fears, their own somewhat mental inabilities to actually do what they wanted to do. And boy, that's it forever in their minds. Mm-hmm. It was a life-changing experience for them to do that. The cool thing was what happened to me, and you always get me to tell these stories I never really tell, but what happened was, I'll tell you this, what would you do, guys? Derek, what did you do? So along the way, there was, the one couple, they couldn't make it physically for, you know, some inabilities to make it along the way. And the one woman, she fell as well on the trail, and her backpack hooked onto a tree. And if that backpack didn't hook onto the tree, she would have fell over a 60-meter cliff into the rapids. So it was almost like, yeah, there was some mystical thing happening there too. But they made the decision, this is not for us. We're going to go back to camp, which was the right decision. And Oliver, the guide, went back to them with them. And then ran back. What took us a half a day, he ran back in 22 minutes, I think, ran back to help us. But I said, I'll go back with them. And a bunch of the crew looked at me and said, no, Kevin, this is your ultimate goal, is to go up to Denison Falls to see Bill Mason. Or not see Bill Mason, but his spirit, right? And I went, yeah, but that doesn't care. That doesn't matter to me right now. Like, it matters for everybody to be safe and feel good about themselves. And I'm not going to go ahead to finish this while everybody else is falling apart.
Right.
And I had no problem going back to that campsite with the two, but the rest of them said, no, you're going with us, buddy. Oliver's got it. He's getting, you know, he's the guy that can take them back, and he's young enough to run back up the hill. You can't. So it all worked out perfectly. We all went and saw it. People that couldn't get to the final edge, I think they were very satisfied with what they saw. Yeah, it all worked out. But I remember that one moment in my life where I said, I don't care about seeing the falls. I just want to make sure that we all have a good experience. And I think everybody have to look into that.
Mm-hmm.
If I was the opposite, I would not be a good person. If I was saying, well, you know, damn to be you, I'm making this. I'm doing this. And I didn't do that.
I think it would depend on the situation. And if I was on the other side, I think I would be a bit annoyed if, okay, I can't make it. Doesn't mean you guys can't go on without me.
Well, yes.
You know what I'm saying?
But also, it's really, I think, and I've heard enough stories, read enough stories, like people camping out in BC. There's a guy I follow on YouTube, Kyle Hates Hiking. I hear enough stories that the key thing is that you can't let an individual go back alone.
Oh, you definitely can't go alone. That's what I'm saying, is if I was that individual, I would probably sit right there until, if there's nobody that wanted to go back.
But then there's nobody watching you in case something, if you're stopping, are you stopping because you're having a health issue?
How far were they?
It was
a quarter way along, so not even half. Yeah,
I probably still would have sat there.
I would have gone back too. It's good that the guide went back, Oliver. If it wasn't for that, if I was on a hike with somebody else, it's like, nope, we're turning back. You know what? If you can't make it, I'm not making it either. I can do this next year.
There was no way anybody, especially the guys, were allowing them to go back on their own.
Oh, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That was never going to happen. As a guide, you would never let that happen. What did happen, which put this in your hat there, Derek, to see what you think about this, is it's called a slinky. So what happened was, we're helping the couple that were getting a little slower on it, but other people were, he's got a slinky right there. Like, what is wrong with you, man?
He's got two of them.
Really?
So we're talking slinky.
We're talking slinkies.
But not the caterpillar.
So we're helping the couple that were slower on the trail, and others that were so full of bigger to go. So we had a lead guide, Oliver. We had a sweep, Mike. And then I was the main sweep. I was behind everybody, right? And then when things were slow, Oliver came back to see what was going on. And then the other half continued on, yelled, saying, "Hey, where are you?" But it continued on. And that's called a slinky. So therefore, we have half the first group moving on without a guide in unknown territory in a you know, difficult trail with two guys and an assistant helping everybody in the back. Where do you think something's going to go wrong?
Right at the front as somebody walks the rest of the group over the cliff and into the waterfall where the gaping maws of a bunch of bears.
No, we put a stop to that, and because we all were professionals, we knew the slinky was happening, so we put a stop to that. But just to help you in the future, don't ever let that happen, because everybody thinks it's going to be the people that we're helping is going to be in danger. No. The other is, great example too, is you think everything's fine, but an hour before the trip ended, Oliver, amazing person, slices his hand with a knife making us lunch. Like, everything was fine. We did first aid, and we're an hour from the lodge. But it's like, see? You think everything's all right.
and I mean, unexpected happens, right? Always be prepared for the unexpected.
Like a Boy Scout.
Right?
Always be ready.
Always be ready. Be prepared. So at the end of the day, everybody had a blast. You enjoyed it. Would you do it again?
Yes. In fact, it's already booked.
Is it?
Yep. We're going around the same time next year, and we're doing a different route. David Wells said, "You want to do the same route?" I went, "No, I don't ever want to do the same route." And it can't be, "Let's go see Bill again." So the idea is to go from Lake Superior along Old Woman Bay and also Agua Cliffs where the native paintings are.
Right.
And finish at Michipicoten at National Superior there. So they'll open that up again, and they've already had there was actually 7 people on the waiting list for the other trip. Which, again, this is a trip I didn't think would ever happen. So yeah, it's good. As long as, you know, I'm getting older, so as long as, you know, I'll be the host with most again, but my stories would be exaggerated a little bit more.
See? That's what's supposed to happen. When you're old, you just get older and your stories become more wildly creative.
The fish was this big.
Between the eyes, yeah.
You guys will love this. You guys will love this. So imagine again being in this canoe, and at the beginning of the first 2 days, I'm seated in the back, and we're all seated beside each other in small seats. And, of course, the closer you get to the front, the smaller the seat.
Like, right.
There's still 2 people. But there's 13 of us. So the last seat, it's just one person. I went, can I have that so I can film? And I got some amazing shots with the camera or whatever. So it was good that I was there. And then I was talking to the people in the back, but the people in the front couldn't hear. And I'm telling story after story after story. Oh. And everybody's laughing. We're all laughing. Of course, the people in the front, well, what are you doing? What's going on? And then so on the way back, I got the front to sit with them and told the same stories that I told in the back.
Winner, winner.
Yeah. And I get home, and my daughter, I tell her what to do, and she goes, "Oh, so you did switch seats, right? You didn't say the same story on the way back to the same people, right, Dad?" And, "Oh, no.
Well, you know what was cool, though, is that they let other people try being in the very, very front.
Yeah.
On the way back.
Right? Yeah, Ed really liked that because he was a keen paddler. He knew what he was doing, and he really wanted something to do other than just power stroke, except he did hit a rock.
Yes.
And we really hit that rock too. Like I didn't get that on film. It was and then we let the Will, the voyageur in front, which is a madman, then they let me in the front.
Weird. Your spinning paddle technique, though, on point, my friend. So Naturally Superior Adventures is at naturallysuperior.com if you want to check them out. If there's any more room on next year's trip, they can book now, but you better hurry up and fight for a spot. All the videos of this trip are on Casey Happy Camper YouTube page. so everybody can go and see what all the hubbub is about, and then go on to naturallysuperior.com and fight for a spot.
Right? That's great, yeah, and Explore Magazine, I've written a series of articles on them. The one's up, two more to come, and more detail for that, and a lot more adventures. I went to Acobel, Quebec.
Well, that's, I got this right here. We're going to have a quick little chit-chat about that. So
that'll be episode two.
That'll be... No, we're going to do it now. This is going to be a nice, long episode here.
Oh, my Lord, really?
Yeah.
I only got half the whiskey left.
I got no whiskey left. No, we'll just do a quick one here. CPAQ, SEPAQ.com. On the menu, click National Parks, and you'll find Aguabel National Park in the Abitibi-Témiscamingue region of Quebec. Now, if you're trying to find it on the map, find Timmins in Ontario, draw a line straight across.
Into Quebec, yeah.
Into Quebec. Almost the same distance, and it is there. A true natural jewel of the Abitibi-Témiscamingue region, Parc National d'Aguabel is home to a variety of geological phenomenon with evocative names. Giant's Kettle, Pillow Lava, 22-meter-high suspended walkway offers a thrilling crossing over a gigantic fault. From this vantage point, you can admire scenery that has been deeply marked by the work of billions of years. Wide range of discovery activities, explore a diversity of wildlife species, moose, beaver, mink, heron, and osprey, just to name a few. And there's snakes, too, apparently. Winter and summer, perfect time to take your time. 30 kilometers of trails you can be walking and hiking. Canoe must-sees are definitely the majestic La Haye, Sault Fault, because we say Sioux, they say So. Fault Lakes. Twin Lakes offer a guaranteed change of scenery. On an excursion, you'll discover the most impressive aspects of the park's geology and geomorphology. Also, plant and animal life, and some spots for picnicking and relaxing. Activities include canoeing, kayaking, stand-up paddleboarding, Rabaska canoeing, which looks like a giant Voyager canoe, fishing, fat biking. In the winter, you can go snowshoeing, kick sledding, ski shoeing, and snow tubing.
Wow.
Aha.
Sounds appealing.
Right? It's about a 6-hour drive north of Ottawa if you take the Quebec way, or 7.5 if you stay on the Ontario side. A lot of people are really weird about the French thing.
What do you mean?
Like, they're afraid to go in because they're going to have to speak French. And there's so much negativity you hear. But I think it's more like Montreal. They don't want the English there.
Yeah.
Right? But seeing your videos, Kevin... There's a lot of English. And they don't care. They just want
people to... No, there was no negativity. So last year I was invited by Abitibi-Témiscamingue. Tourism to go to a Pemica National Park, which is a provincial park, and write a piece for Explore Magazine. And the reason why is they wanted people from Ontario to go because they had enough people from Quebec going.
Right.
And Christy and I went, and also because they were allowing more dog use. There was a big negative thing towards dogs in Quebec back in the day because they didn't want dogs running deer down. Of course, that's old-fashioned. So they go, like, can you go there with your dogs? And we had a lovely time. I went to a Pemica Park, and then we also paddled Lake Kibwa, which is amazing. It's just incredible. It's like Lake Tomogamy without anybody there. And then they said, hey, that's good, Kevin. Can you come back? I go, yeah, but I go somewhere else. And I saw the swing bridge across this gorge
right. In
northern Quebec. I went, what's with that? And, of course, at the time, Christine was going with me with the dogs, and she's terrified of heights. And, of course, my whole thing is to make sure she's terrified. And
been there. Done that.
We're doing that. And I knew nothing about the park. I couldn't even pronounce it. And then they signed me up and to go back again. Explore Magazine said, yeah, we'll help with that. That's a great story. And then Christine couldn't go with the dog, and then my dog stayed back too, so I went up, which is really good because it rained 98% of the time I was there. Like, which is sad because the scenery was amazing. Like, we're talking about, if you ever travel near Temiskaming, you know, in near Mushaw River in Northern Ontario, it turns into a clay belt, like farmland. And you see the hills in the distance, but it's kind of weird. And you do that in Quebec as well when you go north of Temiskaming. And then all of a sudden you hit this boreal forest, like an Amazon forest with jagged cliffs like reaching the skies. And boom, you're there. And there's this national park there that has hikes, has lakes to paddle, a whole bunch of other things. Not a lot of people that I saw. Maybe sometimes it's really busy. I wasn't there during the weekend. But then you can do everything. Like, I was going to paddle all these lakes, and I just got excited about hiking them.
Yeah.
And I got to go back. I got to go back this fall and do a lot more, because I missed so much because I actually, it rained. Like, I did one hike that was supposed to take me a half hour. It took me 3.5 hours, right? But to do that swing bridge was amazing.
The suspension bridge?
Yeah. It was incredible. And then what great luck I have, too, is I was by myself, a little lonely, like, ooh. I thought I had friends, but and then
you had the pineapple out.
Axel was the young nationalist, and he was there to meet me. And the whole French language thing, he was my interpreter, because more northern Quebec you get, the less English speaking. Like, they're very friendly. They know, by the way, they know you're from Ontario, and they know you don't speak French. So don't try.
Right.
Okay, don't even. I tried to order a coffee at Tim Hortons. They just looked at me like, and they gave me a cup with half coffee and half water. And I went, what's this? Well, that's what you ordered. I went, okay. And he met me with his young kid. It reminded me so much of me growing up working in the Nationals. He showed up with his uniform and his binoculars and his backpack and his rain jacket and his first aid and his hat and his sunscreen and his downpouring rain. And he goes, and I thought I was just doing a 5-minute interview with him at the Nature Center. He goes, so I go with you? Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so he was just going through school for learning his species.
Right.
And I was really good on that trip too. Like, I know my species, but I let him show me the species. Right. I jumped in a bit now and then. And I just loved it because he knew more about the rocks and minerals and formation of the earth than I did, because I don't know that stuff. I never liked that in school. And we're talking billions of years that whole lake system and fault line was formed and the rock. Not millions, billions. So that's why the park was formed there, and that's why it's so unique. So I didn't know that unless he went with me.
Of course, he was talking about the rift lakes and everything caused by the tectonic plates and the pillow lava and everything like that. And you're just like, okay, wow, this guy knows this stuff.
And when I'm editing, he even said, you probably won't put this in because it's boring. I went, it's actually not boring to me because I don't know this stuff. So, and also, it's my YouTube channel. So if people find it boring, I don't really care.
This is for me.
But you know what? Like, people have to watch this video, because the two of you together on that hike, it was hilarious. Just the banter back and forth and stuff. And yeah, he's going into all this stuff, and he's got this sheet. Like, people are thinking, well, he's reading all this. But no, that was just his translation
to English.
He can say it all perfectly in French, but the English he had to read.
And the thing about people worried about going there, here's this young kid that I talked to his dad afterwards. His dad sent me a note thanking me profusely for helping the kid out. And I went, he helped me out. Here's this kid that actually spent 2 or 3 nights prior to the trip to make sure he got those notes so he can actually speak to me.
Right.
What did I do? Like, my daughter speaks fluent French, but I don't, right? So he should not be thanking me. And everybody was so very thankful. Oh, so sorry. And, of course, I went to the one gatehouse in the north where I was. I got a backcountry canoe insight. And I looked at the lake. I went, which way do I go? And she goes, I don't speak English. And I went, like, I paddled left, right. And, oh, no, I what is left and right in French? I do know it then.
Gauche, droite.
Yeah, and she said, that way. Good luck.
Good luck. You're on your own.
We never saw him again.
Yeah. No, the culture is amazing. The people are amazing. I've been there again I've been there before, but the last 2 years I've never had any negative. And these are locals. These aren't tourist people that are paid to actually make sure my whole trip is all hunky-dory. These are locals I met along the way that are very nice. Look at all people. Like, you go to Northern Ontario, too. They're all really lovely people. And I know we had a couple American people on the Lake Superior trip, and they were worried about coming to Canada. Are we safe? I went, oh, I can't guarantee you to be safe. But I think you're okay with us. Like it's not an issue, to be quite honest. And sure enough, we even put our Canadian flag up. We had lumberjack jackets on. And at the end, Gary, I ran the fire. I asked him how his trip was, and he started crying. Because I never thought Canadians would be so nice.
It's what we do. Sorry, but it's what we do.
Yep.
See what I did there?
Yeah, I saw that. I heard that. I got it.
Hey,
hey. Hey, hey. Okay, so we got to. So you had a great time, unfortunately, the rain, which means you got to go back.
So yeah, I want to go back in the fall. I want to go back to Lake Louise. No, not Lake Louise, that's where I camped. Lake Sioux? No.
Patrice?
Yeah, and then do the hike. And then halfway, it's a full day hike, like a 9-hour hike, but there's a remote cabin to stay at halfway through. So right. I want to go in the fall and actually do half and then camp at the cabin and come back. Because around you is like, well, I wouldn't say mountains, but I'm talking miniature mountains. Like,
so it's like doing a La Cloche Trail or something.
Yeah, more abrupt than that. Yeah,
oh, yeah?
More abrupt.
Okay.
Yeah, and also the rock is granite, but it's nothing granite you would see in the Laurentians. It's this just sheer slices of rock and rumble everywhere. Diverse. It really is the species that are growing there. It's like going into the Amazon forest. Maybe that's why it rains so much when I was there. Maybe it gets all rain.
Or maybe it's just you. Rain and bugs.
Yeah.
They follow you around.
They do, actually.
Yeah. we noticed while you were paddling, there was a bag of wood in the back of your boat.
Oh, and the Quebec trip.
Yeah.
That was a joke. That was so stupid.
It was.
No. It's so funny. I realized when I edited that, I didn't think the camera got behind me. So, okay, I'll tell you the whole, once again, I'm telling you stories I don't really tell. thank you very much for that. Yeah, for the
Done. You explain this, and I got another one for you.
Go on. Okay, what happened was, I was everywhere. I wasn't home that much. And then, so I'm thinking, I'm back from Superior. I literally had a day to do my laundry, and then I'm off to Quebec. And the organizer said, okay, here's your itinerary. And I went, oh, it's good to know. I'm leaving tomorrow. And found out the first night was in a remote cabin, and then two nights on a backcountry lake, which I wanted to do. I didn't want to stay in a campground. So the fun part, this is my luck, and I'll do this really quickly for you because I'm going on whatever. But
Take
this is
your
a good
time.
Story. Oh, this is a classic story. So I get there, it's 4:30 at night. It took me a lot longer to drive there than I thought because of traffic and construction, actually. And then I get there, and of course the storm's coming. Right. And we're just chatting, and of course I said to them, where am I going? I need to sleep somewhere. And so the remote cabin. So it was down this road, and all the roads in this park are pretty good, except the one I was on. And it was like I'm talking pissing rain that your wipers were going on fast, and you're still not seeing the road.
Right.
And so I'm thinking this is not good. And of course I go across this bridge, and the water is over the bridge, and. what am I doing? And it's getting late, and I get to the parking lot, and they said the drive would take me 20 minutes. It took a lot longer than that. And I get there, and it's somewhat stopped raining, so I go, I have to hike to this remote cabin, which is about 0.5 kilometer. Okay, well, I'm going to take my pack, obviously, but I'm not going to rearrange things. I'm just going to, whatever I have for my backcountry trip, I'm going to keep in my pack. So I take my canoe pack, and I hike along, and thank goodness I didn't take my dog. I was going to take her, but anyway, going there, and it's getting late, and I get to the cabin, and they have a code key, not a key for the padlock, a code, right? And they gave me the code, and I'm trying it, not opening. I went, really? Really? This would only happen to me. They gave me the wrong code. Thank goodness I had my canoe pack, because I had everything in that pack. Can I somewhat went into a somewhat panic and scream fest of this Irish high anxiety. Why me? And then I went, Kevin, why are you so agitated? Because you have everything in your pack to sleep beside the cabin. So I put my tent up, which became a hilarious photo. I have my tent beside the cabin that I actually got, and I slept in the cabin, and I was able to break into the cabin that I filmed a bit of, but not
the
but
window.
But I there was no way I was going to go. It was a heat wave too, massive heat wave. So I'm thinking, I think I'm better in the tent. So I wake up in the morning, get back, and then I had to go to the backcountry site, and they said it was 24 kilometers along the road north. And sure enough, I had to do some other things along the way, some hikes, whatever, to write about. And I get to the campground, and what was supposed to be like half hour, 40 minutes paddle, no. It was a massive lake. And it was said the campsites that were reserved for me were on the island. They weren't on the island. They were on the shoreline. And I had a pamphlet. I didn't have a map. I had a pamphlet looking at where I was supposed to camp. So I finally got to the campsite, and nobody had camped there for a long time. There was a poplar tree growing out of the fire pit. Like, not grass, a poplar tree. So I was like, okay. So what I had to do for work, because I still had to write and do all the other things in the park during the day, and I was camping there at night because I didn't want to stay at the campground because that was my initiative. I had to camp there and then paddle out, do my things for the day, and then paddle back to the site, and then paddle back out again. And it rained the entire time I did that. It did not stop raining. So if you want to know why there was campwood in there, I had no idea what I was doing every minute of the day on that park. I didn't know where I was going, what I needed, and what I had with me. So if you see gear that, why is he having that? I didn't know why I had that.
That was a long story to... Just cause, in case.
But basically, you still had the wood because it was raining too much, so you didn't have a fire.
Right.
I never burned that wood. I never used... In fact, I still have that wood in my car.
So, after we drag that story out of you...
Uh-oh.
I got another question to ask you.
Oh, my Lord. Okay, I'm drinking tea now. All right, go ahead.
Explain the pee bottle.
Oh!
Yeah. Yeah. No, I had to. It had to be done.
It did. I would be out there in the rainstorm peeing against a tree. I am not pee bottling it.
You will? You would if you were in my predicament. You would. Because I was so anti-pee bottle for all my life because Andy finally, he succumbed to it years ago. And many times I'll be, you know, through the night, wake up, and there's a man kneeling over me, urinating in a bottle. I'm thinking, what the hell is going on in my life? but he, you know, he said, I'm not going out there. I pee every 20 minutes because he has some urinary issue. And I go, but I don't have to do that because I'm a real man. I'm a real bush person, right? And so, it was raining constant. The bugs were bad, too, at that site because nobody camped there, so the bugs were bad. And I said, I'm done. I'm doing it. But I used a Gatorade bottle that I use, which has a small orifice.
Right.
There was no accidents, but there's no accidents. There was no spillage, but there's a certain point where I'm thinking I'm going to urinate more than what this can hold.
Right.
And when you're getting to a certain age, you just can't piss it. The urethra doesn't pinch as much as it.
Yeah, no. I'm out there in the full-on bugs and storm, sitting there peeing against a tree, get hit by electricity, doesn't matter. Lightning comes down, thunder, the whole meal. I'm outside.
I agree with you, but not that night. You weren't there with me, were you?
Oh, maybe I was. I saw pineapples. is Christine there?
She just walked by right now with puff bottles. But no, maybe puffs. And, Oliver has to go out. Oh, she's going to throw up?
Uh-oh.
He's disgusted by the pee bottle story, so he's going to throw up.
What's up, Christine? What's going on?
Nothing.
Did he throw up?
No.
Okay, do you want to say hello?
Hello, everybody!
Oh, he is. Oh, he's going to throw up.
He's going to pee.
Oh, he's doing...
Did you got a bottle?
No, Oliver's not using a pee bottle. He's actually peeing on the
Kevin
lawn.
Out there, he'll teach him.
Yep.
Here, Oliver, pee in this bottle so you don't have to go out of the tent.
I think Christine's looking at me like now, like, really? Is this what you do? Really?
Yeah, this is what you've evolved into. Devolved into.
Devolved.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, are you glad I'm living with you now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Does she know about the pineapples?
You know, if she did, I didn't know about the pineapples. Upside down pineapple.
Somebody explained that to me the other day, but I had no idea. Now I don't even remember now.
Oh, okay. She's getting to the lion stage there.
Yeah, okay.
I went down the basement and found a whole bunch of pineapples.
All over the house. So would you go back to the Quebec one? You're going to go back in the fall, you say?
Definitely, I would go back. I would go back to Pemmican as well. I really like that park. Really clean park, really well maintained. Washrooms were like spot on. Lake Kipwa, go back in a heartbeat, no problem at all. Yeah, there's no issues with. And I get that. Like, you don't speak French at all. Like, I don't. Right. To go there, and you would think, oh, why am I here? They're so warmly type people, very rich culture, very proud of themselves, especially in the north. And don't quote me, but I didn't have any issues. Even at the gas station, filling it up, and they're looking at me like, I have no idea what you just said. And then we go over the hand motions.
Yeah.
It's fine. The reason why the tourism wanted me there, too, is that they're like, look, we get enough people from Montreal up here, but Ontario is shorter. Like, so we, you know, I don't know what the issue is. And, of course, it's the language barrier. And it is part of Canada.
I think that's the biggest thing, is the language barrier.
Yeah, but embrace it then.
So, my last question here, I don't know if Derek has any because we've been ignoring him all night. Do you find a big difference between Ontario parks and the Quebec parks that you've been to so far?
Yeah, huge. Yeah. In goods and bads. First of all, in Quebec, national parks are provincial parks, and they do also have national parks, like Parc Canada.
Right.
But they call them national parks. They're all uniforms. They really, the ones I have been, the washrooms are immaculate. You would think that's not really, who cares, Kevin? It matters to me. And
there's a guy peeing in a bottle.
But I find the staff. I'm not knocking on Ontario parks with everybody. Want me to characterize the staff at all the parks were so like right on you. Like, how can we help you?
Right,
we want to help you. And it wasn't because I was there for tourism. They didn't know why I was there. The gate people when I arrived, I had explained why I was there. It wasn't like, oh, Kevin, because they have no clue who the happy camper is in northern Quebec. In fact, to try to explain what I did made them laugh.
I'm an influencer.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I would say that never use that term when you're in any.
Any situation.
Never say you're an influencer.
Yeah.
You'll get a different reaction. Yeah. Be yourself. That young kid, young guy, the interpreter.
Axel?
He went on the trail with me because I think someone told him that he should. And about 10 minutes onto that trail, he stopped and said, you're not an influencer, are you? I went, well, I guess I am. I really know what that whole thing is. He goes, no, you're different. And he goes, you're here for the solid story. You're not here for 10 minutes to get the shot.
Right.
Yeah, because he
not
went.
A grammar.
No, yeah. No. He went to this waterfall and almost for me to set the shot up. I went, yeah, well, let's go. Let's go. I want to see the trees. And we spent the day together and had a good time together. That was a huge difference. I got to know him and good friends for life as well. So there's a big difference. I'm not knocking those people for doing that for a reason, but I get the people that work at those parks when those people show and say, because actually, oh, that's right. Adrienne, the person that organized it all, she said it rained. I think you were the first influencer that didn't go away because it rained.
Right.
I went, what do you mean? I'm here. I'm not going to drive home. Oh, no. We've had some people that just like, no, we need perfect conditions, which makes sense. If you're going to promote an area, you need perfect. I mean, I really felt bad. I'm trying to promote this area, and it's like pissing rain the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And but what I got back with the story and the video was that was my experience. It's called camping.
Right. Some of the best times are happening under the tarp in the rain. The best conversations and, you know.
Yep. Well, peeing in a Gatorade bottle.
Peering in a Gatorade bottle. Yeah. Sorry, could you please pass me the Gatorade bottle? I must tinkle.
Make sure you drink from the right one.
Oh, I'm sorry, was that the wrong bottle? Not the whiskey bottle!
It's funny, I did have two bottles in my tent that night, two Gatorades, one full with Gatorade and one not.
Which one did
Don't
I need?
Drink in the dark. Drink the cool one, not the warm one.
I had it apple juice for breakfast.
Yeah, it was warm apple juice. Anyway, so from Lake Superior to Northern Quebec, all you've learned about is peeing in a bottle and pineapples.
That's our takeaway.
That's our takeaway. Wah, 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 wah. Pineapples. Wah, wah, wah. Peed in a bottle. You had a good couple of trips. You've done a few more trips since, amongst all that. But those are pretty good trips, though.
Yeah, I did. I had a really good trip a couple of days ago, and I'm going again in two more days again. And a bunch of others as well. I'm going with Andy again, but we're not sure where because he's traveling and visiting his daughter. So we're going somewhere. I had a good time with Tim from Canadian Outdoor Equipment just a couple of days ago. It is kind of cool. Like he said, Kevin, if you got time, I have to go out and not just do a trip because it's too busy doing a trip. I need to test gear out before I put it on my shelves at my store. And I went, yeah, you've done it before. He goes, yeah, we need to film it, but we can't really show it until it's out, obviously. Mm-hmm. But can you help me do that? So here's the thing. I did something really wrong the other day. So roofers were doing our roof. Again, this is a story I haven't told anybody. Now look, thank you very much.
The world is going to know.
Oh, my Lord. Well, it's a good one. It's a good one. And so the roofers, I was back to the trip, whatever, and I'm loading up my gear, and there's roofers doing the roof. And it was that heat wave, and roofers, like, they can handle the heat, but they were not doing well. They were just drenched in sweat. And it was Friday at 6 at night, and I give them a beer, and two guys a beer. And the one guy goes, well, I'm going to have to come back on the weekend to finish up. I go, it's going to be hot still. He goes, yeah, it's fine. He goes, well, you're working? I went, yeah. I cleaned my nails. I trimmed my nails. He goes, what do you mean? I went, well, I'm working with Tim Foley and showing some camp gear on film. So I'm the hands to hold the gear. So
hand
he's helping
model.
Me. I'm the hand model. And so I really have to make sure my hands are all great. And actually, to be honest, it is really tough doing that. We took us hours to film certain scenes that he needed. But to try and explain to that to a roofer that just been on the roof all day, that you had a tough life and tough job to go to. And it doesn't go well. And I was kind of joking with the guy. Like, I think the one roofer found it funny. The other roofer goes, I'm going to kill him now. Where is the roofing gun? And I'm going to shoot him right now. And so I got in and Christian goes, yeah, you know, when in doubt, Kevin, say nothing.
Well, where's the adventure in
I know.
Yeah, you got to say things.
Yeah, I really felt about it. Anyway, they enjoy the beer I give them. And yeah, my hands are really rough now because I've been holding gear. Yeah.
You've been holding gear, tying knots and such. And
it's terrible.
Out there in the woods, your life is hell. Yeah, it's tough, Kevin. It's tough. I can see why you peed in the bottle now.
Yeah.
I'm never letting you live that down either.
I didn't want to do it, but I had to.
Yeah. Your eulogy at his funeral. Yeah, I knew Kevin many years and the things he saw and did. But the worst thing he ever did, let me tell you.
We played Gatorade roulette. Nobody knew which warm bottle they were going to get.
he couldn't pinch his urethra.
Age will do that to you. Alrighty, Kevin. Well, thanks for coming and talking to us about this.
Yes, we really appreciate this.
It's one thing to watch your videos. Again, Casey Happy Camper YouTube channel. All the videos are there of these two trips. But it's nice to talk to you and get those extra little bit stories that you don't want to tell on film, but for some reason you just open up to
The between the scenes stuff.
Yeah, the betweens stories that are happening. Yeah, that's just brings a tear to your eye. And then you just got to drop comments and demand the full explanation. Yes. And we seem to get it from you, Kevin. It's like molding clay. Let's go dig up more dirt and have them on next week. Again, thank you very much for joining us, Kevin.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. I hope you guys get out there. If you've never been to Lake Superior, you need to go. If you've never been to anywhere in northern Quebec, you need to go. But most of all, you need to go somewhere.
Especially now, before winter sets in.
Well, in winter, it's easier to pee in a bottle because you're not getting out of your sleeping bag in the middle of the night when it's 40 below. You pee in a bottle.
I don't. Even when it's like 40 below, I get out of the tent and I write my name in the snow. Derek was here. And then I sign it. I date it. I got to pee a lot. Yes, definitely get out there.
I don't like peeing in the snow because I have a dot in the name Kevin.
You have to break the stream.
You gotta break the stream.
Kevin. Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, we'll be looking forward to more stories from you, Kevin. And
okay, sounds good, guys.
We'll have you back. We're coming up September to our 500th episode.
Oh.
So we might have you on again.
Okay, maybe. I'll have to do something special. Yeah.
Pee in two bottles.
I'll get some merch out. Kevin pee bottle.
Kevin's pee bottle. Oh, you can make a fortune off of those. A happy camper pee bottle.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, you'll make a mint, Kevin.
I think this episode has been 4 or 5 trains long.
That's the fifth train.
Was that the fifth one I heard?
Yeah. You can hear it. I live near a train. It's wilderness.
It's the wilderness, the train wilderness. Yeah. Kevin, some days, he goes out and stands with his canoe next to the train track. We're trying to wave him down, but they never stop.
Yeah, they never stop.
They just look at Kevin. They honk the horn.
Those
give him freight
trains are so rude.
And he's got this little sad face on because they won't stop.
Take me on an adventure.
Take me into the woods. Drop me off somewhere at a lake. And they never do. Poor Kevin. All right. On that note, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And you can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or make it easy. Just go to paddlingadventuresradio.com and stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. See you next time.